Tatiana Andrusov's novel, A Question of Seduction, Arrows, received a 5-star review on Amazon, so she decided to give you a little taste of it by reading a couple of pages from the novel's first chapter. It will carry you to the world through the heart with a woman who works for an international organization and a government official as they cross paths at a high-level meeting in 1986 in a world which is very different and yet similar to ours. So here is Tatiana Andrusov with A Question of Seduction.
He was still staring at her. Nervously, she twiddled her thumbs and touched the microphone in front of her. He had been at it for 3 days now, on and off from 10 in the morning to 6 in the evening. She tapped on the nameplate in front of her, the one bearing the initials of the organization she worked for in Geneva. He puffed on his cigar, but his eyes did not leave her. She stood up and slowly left the room, being careful to disturb as little as possible. She felt his eyes following her. He was down and across from her in the big round meeting room. As she walked out, she played with the idea of asking her colleagues at the table if they couldn't sit somewhere else, but knew it was impossible. She was the lowest ranked in her tiny delegation of 3. She had been brought along almost as an afterthought to this high-powered ministers' meeting, and she knew why. She was there to keep track of what went on, while the other 2 went to receptions and dinners. She went into the large hall between the meeting rooms and sat down on a sofa. Through glass walls, she had a clear view across the garden plaza of the conference center. Multicolored flowers brightened it. Beyond was the city of multi-storied buildings. She closed her eyes and relaxed. There were sounds, the steps of approaching feet. She jerked up and opened her eyes. Oh no, she thought. She had chosen the wrong moment. On the side, she saw some young men in white jackets giving last touches and placing trays with biscuits and rolls to the arrangement of a long table covered with cups and saucers. It was time for a break for the delegates. She was about to slip away when she heard her name called. It was the senior man in her group, Mr. Singh, an amiable, jovial Indian. "Miss Bogdanov," he said, reaching her, "I was wondering if you would write a response to what was said by the delegate of the United States this morning." "Of course," she smiled. It was natural. Since she was American, it was her duty to rebuff what the man had said. The U.S. position on price supports for basic commodities for things as diverse as rice, dried fish, and crude oil was contrary to the position of many of the countries in the organization she worked for. It was up to her to try to convince her fellow national that there were good reasons for it. "Now, why don't we have a cup of tea?" Mr. Singh added. "Come, come." She followed meekly, though she felt like going out into the sun or going back to the meeting room anywhere to be alone for a few more minutes. But she couldn't, not if she wanted a promotion this year, and she was bent on having it. She looked up and froze. She was almost touching distance from him. He was facing away from the table, holding a cup in his hand, talking to a U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce. His eyes met hers before she had the time to turn away. They were light, she realized, bronze with specks of green and a dark aureole around them. They arrested her. Was he smiling? She seemed to detect something to that effect in the stern, well-sculpted face, partly hidden by a neat, trimmed beard. She turned away and went up to her table. Her hand was shaking. She had to make an effort to follow Singh's words. It was with relief that she noticed that he did not show up at the meeting after the coffee break. She sat back and started noting what was being said. An hour later, before going to lunch, she went to her organization's pigeonhole to take out any new documents. There was an envelope for her. "His Excellency Abdallah Musrani, Ambassador," she skipped a few words, her name followed, "to a dinner in honor of His Excellency Karim Al-Mahabi, Deputy Minister of Commerce." She barely shook her head. Younger, she had been flattered by such things. Now she knew that her name was either taken directly from the delegates list or been picked because she had happened to catch a deputy minister's fancy. An Arab minister at that. She would not go. She had too much to do. She had to write a speech and in the evening attend the reception of the U.S. Embassy. That afternoon, she stayed in her hotel room to compose the first draft of the rebuttal. She had barely finished when the telephone rang and Singh announced that he was downstairs, waiting for her. It was time to go to the U.S. ambassador's residence. She rushed to the bathroom, washed her face, hastily made it up again, and threw on the ample long-sleeved dress she had brought with her. She looked at herself critically. Her mousy brown hair was much too dirty. She pulled it up and back like a ballet dancer. Now her light gray eyes seemed bigger. She sprayed on some eau de cologne. When she stepped out of the car some 20 minutes later into the flower-perfumed tropical night, she noticed that the ambassador's residence had not really changed in a decade. There was the same semi-circular drive, the same air of college president's house. The ambassador stood tall. His wife was all smiles. The faces had been different, but it had been all the same. A film came over her eyes, and she had to force herself out of it as Singh and she proceeded to the main room. 10 minutes later, as she was munching on a piece of grilled meat, she caught a silhouette moving about the room. She almost bit her tongue as she lost the innate rhythm of eating. After a minute, she looked around and headed towards the Assistant Secretary of Commerce. The little circle around him was discussing the thorny matter of floor prices. She inserted herself and managed a comment or two when the Assistant Secretary's attention suddenly drifted. "Ah, Your Excellency," he exclaimed. She moved slightly aside and found herself eyes to beard and nose. "Madam," she heard a deep, rich voice. "Your Excellency, this is Lana Bogdanov, who's with the trade agency in Geneva," the American introduced them. "My pleasure," the rich voice said. "I believe we sit almost across from each other at the meeting. Your name sounds Russian, are you?" "No, Your Excellency. I'm American, of Russian origin," Lana informed him. "I see. That is why your first name is not quite Russian," the rich voice noted. "Actually, a nickname from a movie star." Now there was a smile. He was rather tall, with angular features and light olive skin. That and something else, something she couldn't place, made her wonder what other blood flowed in him. "Miss Bogdanov is now trying to convince me that the U.S. position is wrong. What do you say, Your Excellency?" intervened the U.S. Assistant Secretary. "How can one not be convinced by such a charming debater?" Lana's blood rose. She hated this kind of denigration of women. She flashed her disapproval. The deputy minister half closed his eyes and added, "But of course you must realize, my dear secretary, that we agree with the organization, especially considering what the recent precipitous drop in the price of crude is doing to the development of a whole region. He meant the Middle East and his own country, part of it, which had started on the way to modernization thanks to the high prices of oil, too often their only meaningful export. But of course, America, under the market economy emphasis of the Reagan administration, believed in relying on what markets would do by themselves. Besides, it made things so much easier for so many countries which relied on imported oil. He spoke perfect English, slightly accented, with both British and American nuances, the British somewhat stronger. "Yes, of course our positions differ," agreed the assistant secretary and added, "excuse me," as he stepped away at a nod from the ambassador. There was a late arrival for him to meet. "From the way you speak English, I would not have thought you were American," the deputy minister remarked, as she realized they were standing quite alone. "It's my background." "Nothing else?" "Half a lifetime spent in Europe." "That, yes," the deputy minister agreed and watched her. A silence followed. Lana didn't know what to do. She couldn't excuse herself. Not with a deputy minister as interlocutor.
"Always with the same organization?" she heard.
"No, not at all. I've been in UN headquarters in New York, as well as the UN Industrial Organization in Vienna."
"That is strange for someone in trade," he commented.
"But I'm not, Your Excellency." "Then what is your specialty?" Was he really interested, or was it just a way to talk to her?
"Interagency matters and liaison with governments."
"Attached to the Trade Organization's Secretary General's office?" "Yes." She was surprised. He knew.
"I was with the delegation to the UN New York for 3 years in the 70s, he explained. "Perhaps we saw each other then."
"I doubt it. That was when I was in Vienna. Although I did come for some weeks to the General Assembly in 1976.
"What did you cover?"
"Economic affairs," she half whispered. "I was a bit here and there. Perhaps we did run into each other," she agreed.
Why the continued conversation, she wondered.
"Yes, you would have been a rather rare apparition.
A beautiful, young, career woman engrossed in her papers." His eyes danced.
"Now I remember. You were the lady who used to frighten members of more than one delegation. You sat all alone with a coffee cup and a briefcase by the side in the delegates' lounge, always dressed in a two- or even three-piece suit before that became the businesswoman's uniform."
"Your Excellency," she protested.
He was making her blush.
"But it is true, madam. For us it seems so strange, especially because you were and are a more than attractive woman."
Lana looked down. "You flatter me, sir.
We always wondered whether you were married and whether you ever change into something more feminine. Now I can finally see that you do wear something besides suits. So your husband does see another side.
He had known all along. He had just pretended not to recall. She didn't know that was the image she had struck. She had been too busy trying to prove she could do better than her male colleagues. Anyway, it hadn't bothered her friend in Vienna at the time, a blonde Mexican who counted the months before leaving what he called a most boring place." The deputy minister's eyes were scanning her face.
"I have no husband, Your Excellency. My work is my life."
"Oh, I cannot believe them, madam," he responded. "Not all men can be that frightened of you." For a second, her jaw clenched. She felt a shudder down her spine.
"Everyone chooses the way they live," she uttered tersely.
His face clouded up.
His eyes met hers. There was almost a hint of sadness in them, but it disappeared as quickly as it had appeared. "Your Excellency, I'm sure, is happily married." She knew she had no right to say that, but it came out anyway.
"Yes, to a wonderful woman."
"As it should be, especially in your society," she spurted, before catching herself. "Yes," he smiled. "The same society which would have never left a woman like you alone." "But I'm not alone." "You have a friend?" His questions were too personal, but she should have been smarter at the beginning, not let herself into the trap of answering a sly comment leading her to divulge her marital status and asking for his. "Our laws and our customs permit that," she said. He didn't look as if he quite believed her, and it dawned upon her that he thought she was having an illicit affair. "My friend is a widower," she corrected the deputy minister's thoughts.
"Then why don't you marry?"
His was the direct approach. She wanted to say, "None of your business," but instead explained, "It is easier not to because of his children and my work."
"That, madam, is an excuse,"
she smiled. "It is. I simply like my freedom. I don't like to come home to a family. I don't want the responsibility."
"Is Your Excellency satisfied?"
"No. We will continue the discussion tomorrow night when you come to our dinner." She discerned every green spot in his bronze irises. "I'm afraid I have too much work." His tan face became dark.
"You cannot refuse, madam.
I believe your job is liaison with governments."
Lana stiffened. "He wouldn't do anything, would he?" She bit her lips. "Pigs," she said to herself. Someone approached, apparently an aide, and whispered to him. He inclined his head slightly. "I look forward to seeing you at dinner," he stated, and left.
If you would like to know more, you can go to Amazon for an electronic or paperback version of the book and tell us what you think of the reading and if you would be interested in an audio version.